hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life while fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing in the morning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. And they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the far and dive deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. And you're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and news for our people. And of course, those are European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is actually the second day here in the province of Ontario of the trust fund kid, that's Justin Trudeau's carbon tax. It's costing a little over 4 cents more per liter, and for Americans, that's about 16 cents more a gallon. that's still quite a chunk. It will, of course, work its way through the economy. It's not just that it will cost you more to drive a car, but it will also cost more for your food, because most food, at least here, is transported by car. By truck, and trucks use diesel, and so on, and so all that carbon tax will increase the cost of food. Why are we doing this? Well, our government, or at least our federal government, is in the grips of climate change fanatics. Now, they have all the real credibility of a witch doctor. Remember what it was like not very long ago. Well, I actually remember as far back as I do. Back around 1970, a book came out, The Coming Ice Age. So for about a decade, people were worrying themselves sick about the coming ice age. How could the world survive? Well, at least we weren't blaming ourselves. Well, then by the early 90s, out of a conference in Rio, directed by a conspiratorial Canadian by the name of Maurice Strong, a
a self-interested businessman, a UN operative, an anti-white one-worlder. Something called global warming was announced. Well, that set off an orgy of demands that, global warming. Well, the world was warming, and it was warming up. There wasn't actually that much evidence of that, but okay. Dire predictions that the oceans were going to rise, New York City would be underwater, maybe not a bad thing, incidentally. Al Gore, who was a big global warming proponent, warned us that by 2013, the Arctic ice cap would have melted. This is now 2019, 6 years later. Any sign of the Arctic ice cap? Yep, it's still there. Has it melted away? No. So they were wrong. In fact, there's a lot of other evidence they were wrong. But where it became really mischievous now was global warming was our fault. Okay, how is it our fault? Well, we allegedly create a lot of carbon dioxide when we burn hydrocarbons like gasoline, diesel, oil, coal. No coal for coal-fired hydro generators, and so on. So, you see, it's all our fault. If we could just give up generating carbon dioxide by burning, say, gasoline, we'd save the planet. Well, there are a number of problems with this. First of all, carbon dioxide is not causing the warming. The slightest knowledge of history would have called this preposterous theory into question. And I'll explain why. We've had in the past, well, let's just take the past 1500 years. We've had several cooling periods and several warming periods. Around 800 or 900, the Earth warmed up to allow for instance, the Vikings to move from to explore from Scandinavia across to Iceland, Greenland, we now know Baffin Island, Newfoundland, and probably well into the North American interior along the Great Lakes. Well, then around 1400, that period that cooled, and by Shakespeare's time, say around the year 1600, in this cold snap, people could skate on the Thames River in London. We've got pictures of them doing that. And then it warmed up again. Now, with this warming up in the end of the Dark Ages, almost no hydrocarbons were being burned. Perhaps a little bit of coal, some wood, a little bit of peat. And the population of Europe was very small. Okay, then if human use of coal, etc., is the cause, well then, as the cause had continued, why would there be cooling? None of it makes any sense. But anyway, that became the fear du jour. And there were massive demands for doing away with the burning of carbon. Windmills were going to replace coal-fired electrical generators. People were attacked for using the automobile. We're too automobile dependent. What should we do? Roller skate. And much of North America, the trains that may be practical in Europe are just not practical. So the new conspiracy theorists dreamed up the carbon tax. So we'll punish ourselves through carbon tax, and presumably people will use their cars less, stay at home, or do something else. Or a few years ago, the global warming became so discredited, and some of the statistics, even by scientists, had been fudged, that they wisely changed their ground. Now it's not so much global warming we have to fear, but climate change. There's climate change coming. That's probably a safe one. The climate's always changing, so you can't lose with that one. But where the problem is, I mean, I don't dispute there's climate change. What I dispute is that we have anything to do with it. And we don't. And I'll give you the simple answer. It's sunspots. Explosions, mysterious explosions on the sun. In periods where they increase in numbers, the Earth warms up. In periods where they decrease in number, the Earth cools off. Anything you can do about it? Afraid not. You know, pray if you like, but a carbon tax is just not going to do it. Here's a story that I've touched on before, but this is a show I did with Brian Rue, and it's now up on the internet. Hope you'll take a gander at it. And it's about the media smear attack on me, particularly by my old hometown Hamilton Spectator, or I call it the Expectorator, in other words, one big spit, having to do with the shooting in New Zealand.
It's March 29th, 2019. I'm with Paul Frong, and he's the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. And Paul, you've been accused of hate speech, a hate crime. So tell us about this.
Yeah. Well, the orgy of repression that follows any manifestation from nationalists has only just begun after the shooting in New Zealand. I think we all knew it would. All sorts of people have again been deplatformed. This happened after Charlottesville. Yeah, this requires a bit of a bit of background. Right after the shooting in Christchurch, New Zealand, I got to read the manifesto of the accused, and I was expecting to read something, kind of garbled and a big mishmash, but that was not the case. It was a very closely reasoned, documented explanation of why he did what he did. And I particularly like the first section where he outlines the problem. He says the problem is basically twofold. It's the massive invasion organized by our so-called leaders of white countries, Canada, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and all of Western Europe. So we're being replaced. That's the agenda. And we also have a below replacement white birth rate. So the two lines are converging into disaster. He argues very, very persuasively about that. And I agree with him. I agree with about 90% of his analysis. He also referenced many people who had fought particularly the Islamic invasions over the centuries. People I knew about, like Charles Martel, and many people I didn't know about. We're dealing with an intelligent man here. The next part of the manifesto deals with who he was as a person, how he went from one political philosophy to another, and at one point, apathy, he called himself at one point an eco-fascist, and so on. And then finally, he gets to the reasons that this is why he's going to do this violent act. I wanted to publish that because, first of all, because I think people have a right to go to original sources. My friend, historian David Irving, used to always say in his lectures, "Ladies and gentlemen, I go to the archives." Original sources, not what Professor A said and Professor B said, and I just slightly rewrite it, but go to the original sources. Well, if you're interested in why this man did what he did in Christchurch, New Zealand a couple weeks ago, here it is, you can read it and make your own decision. I went one step further, though. I don't agree with violence. I think he makes a strong point about what's happening to us. I'm not so sure that shooting up a mosque, killing 50 people and wounding 48 or 49 others is the best way to go for a whole lot of reasons. tactically and morally, and so on, but that doesn't matter. I made it quite clear, I do not agree with violence. But, and that was my big but, we have to be able to debate and discuss these matters. And I've used the line for well over a decade, when you silence the man of the pen, or in your case, the video, you will have to deal with the man of the sword. Because the next free thinker coming along, if he's not allowed to speak or do a video, well, he might decide to cause a spot of bother, as the English say. And I pointed out some of the repression we face in Canada and the Western world. Most Western nations, except the United States, have something like hate speech laws or whatever. In Germany, you've got to believe in the Holocaust, or you go to jail. You go to jail. They talk about theocracies. You're like, in Iran, you've got to be a good Muslim. Well, actually, no, you can be a Christian and a Jew, but at least publicly, you cannot oppose Islam. Well, it's no different in Germany. It's just that the religion's different. It's not Allah. You cannot be insulted. It's the
Holocaustianity.
Anyway, yeah. I made that point. I also said that there are active efforts in Canada to marginalize people who question immigration. And I mentioned that Justin Trudeau, who would meet with any sexual deviant who shows up, the weirder the better, he's been met with the fellow who's now on trial for multiple assaults on his wife. He's the fellow who they're apparently were captured in Afghanistan. He didn't meet with anybody, but he would not meet with the protesters in Ottawa, because among their ranks were yellow vests, and the yellow vests were critical of immigration. They've even been described as being controlled by neo-Nazis and all the usual stuff. And that's wrong. It's his job to talk to people, to listen to me, not to lecture us, but to listen to what people say. All people, all sorts of people, not just politically correct. And in fact, elements of the Jewish lobby, like Bernie Farber, severely criticized Maxime Bernier and the Conservative Party leader Andrew Scheer for having met with these people. And so you know what they have to say. And just because if you meet with somebody doesn't mean you agree with them. In fact, a politician ought to be getting input from the people he's supposed to represent. And there are many other examples, but my point was, as we become more and more repressive, we are pretty much guaranteeing this sort of violence. So flip it around. If we want to work on a peaceful solution to the immigration invasion, we have to be able to discuss it. That was my great contribution. Well, I think it was only up 2 days before Richard Warman found it, and he's, of course, lurking in the bowels of the Department of National Defense in Ottawa. I do not know what that guy does.
He's your old nemesis going back many years.
Yes, you and I may have suspicions which we dare not mention on air. But anyway, Richard Warman seems to have lots of time on his hands, and he fires off a complaint to the Hamilton Police Service, the hate squad, the my posting violated Section 319 of Canada's Criminal Code. That's willfully promoting hatred against a privileged minority. I don't know who the minority here would be. I guess the shooter was critical of Islam. I don't know. Anyway, up to now, there's been, I haven't heard from the Hamilton Police Service. I have been after them on another matter since October. I ran for mayor in October, and an Antifa group, anonymous of course, made posters with the names of all my people who signed my nomination papers, individual posters, and posted them in some cases around the people's neighborhood, giving their name, address, and in some cases even phone number, and something like that. Do you know who your neighbor is and your neighborhood?
Well, it's really dirty politics, eh?
Well, no, not just dirty, Brian, illegal.
Oh, illegal.
Yes, because they got the names from City Hall, and the names of the people who signed your nomination paper are part of the public record. it says the Ontario Elections Act, for election purposes. So, not to smear these people, and it is a smear. Many of the people who signed my nomination papers didn't know me from a hole in the ground. All I said was, I'd like to run for mayor, I'm very concerned about traffic gridlock. All you're doing by signing this nomination paper is putting me on the ballot. You're not committing yourself to vote for me, which is all quite true. Anyway, the Hamilton Police Services haven't opened a file on that matter. And I have probably called close to 20 times to several officers who have had control of the file in the time since. I've emailed the original officer, who apparently now is on family leave. I have never received an email or a phone call back. Well, you know, I'm going to continue after it, and I may have to escalate it to the next level. But that, I have to say, half of the police are not particularly good at communicating. But so I haven't heard.
They don't seem to care.
Oh, so I haven't heard from them at all about this investigation. And but anyway, of course, part of the reason that the enemies of free speech do this is as an opportunity, working in conjunction with the what the Germans call the Lügenpresse or the lying press, or Donald Trump calls, well, he calls them the lying press too, but he calls them the fake news press. I call them the soap opera press. But anyway, is that this allows them to smear their opponents, in this case me. So this article appeared on Tuesday, I'm going to say the 19th. Hamilton Police investigating white supremacist Paul Fromm proposing New Zealand shooter's manifesto. I would argue that a reasonable person reading that would say, well, I think I read that the New Zealand shooter was a white supremacist. That means Paul Fromm must agree with the manifesto, right? That's why I posted. I think that's a reasonable interpretation. Except, it's utterly false. I don't agree with shooting people. I said that. Well, you wouldn't know that, friend.
Maybe Richard Warman never read what you wrote.
I don't know what he read or what he wrote. I don't know what he read, but this is the article that appeared. Police say they are investigating white supremacist and former Hamilton Barrel candidate Paul Fromm for a possible hate crime. And well, they just repeat that. I won't read the whole article. The Hamilton Police Hate Crime Unit is aware of the social media post by Mr. Fromm. Constable Jerome Stewart said, "We continue to investigate in order to determine if a criminal offense has occurred." Stewart declined to comment further. Then says, "I'm the director of CAFE and the Canada First Immigration Reform Committee." Well, that is true. And then, Hamilton resident was stripped of his Ontario teaching license in 2007 for unprofessional conduct outside the classroom. Well, actually, that wasn't quite the reason. But because he embraced views and beliefs contrary to multiculturalism and tolerance and participated in white supremacist groups and events. Now, the leader of my own union spoke at Communist May Day rallies. Well, that was okay.
Yeah.
He, that's me, previously supported Holocaust denier Ernst Zundel, who was deported to Germany in 2006 after Canadian judge deemed him a security threat. And then just says something about the shooter, Vernon Tarrant. Okay, that's the article. Now, I would argue that the article has three components. Number one, police are investigating. Number two, they're investigating me, and they're investigating about the posting the Mr. Tarrant's manifesto. One interesting thing about the article is it never quotes me for the very good reason they never interviewed me. They do put in a number of what would seem to be negative pieces of information about me. Why would they do that? Well, because the point of the article isn't to get to the bottom of it, to say, why did you post this thing? Well, that would mean they'd actually have to have read my introduction. My concern is they did read the introduction, and that's suppressed, because the impression they want to give is that Paul Fromm supports terrorism. I start off by arguing with the term white supremacist. The the Spectator earlier, when it covered my election campaign, referred me correctly as a white nationalist. And there's a difference. A white supremacist wants to rule over others. I often use the example of George Bush. Now, whether he does it in the name of being white, I don't know. But the idea of going around to other countries and regime changing and trying to get them to adopt democracy, that is imposing our ways on others. I don't want to impose our ways on others. I just don't want hordes of others in my country. I want my country to be essentially, as it started off, as European, and with a small number of Aboriginals and a small number of other people. That's the big difference between a nationalist and a supremacist. So that's one thing. The fact they never interviewed me, or even never quoted what was already up there on the internet, assuming that even the reporter, who I thought there was a woman, but it strikes me as an Israeli name, certainly never contacted me. And there's a similar version of the article in the Toronto Star, and the Star, I believe the Star actually owns the Spectator, and in that version, the sources of the information negative to me was the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so what the writer did was not interview me, not give me a chance to have my say, but construct some negative pieces of information or innuendo from mortal enemies. The Southern Poverty Law Center is not some sort of objective research group. It is a mega fundraising group for itself. It has a war chest of over $100 million. They back you in ads of money each year from northern, mostly Jewish donors, by endlessly repeating the mantra, "The Nazis are coming, the Nazis are coming." Yeah, so. But the Southern Poverty Law Center is now in decline. Police agencies and many U.S. media used to go treat them as a go-to group for information on, you know, the populace and the right. That has faded. Also, they've been sued repeatedly by people for lying. And then most recently, one of their co-founders and longtime board member, Morris Dees, has been fired for persistent sexual harassment of employees. I mean,
wow.
They're
destroying themselves.
Oh, yeah. The New York Times recently did an article about a week ago by a former SPLC staffer about what a poison environment it is, but it's all about fundraising. And how he became disillusioned. Your viewers may want to check that out, New York Times and Southern Poverty Law Center. The technique, though, is defame. Call me a white supremacist and say I posted this manifesto, not explaining that I disagree with the shooter's conclusions, Mr. Terror's conclusion. I disagree with violence. That is a rather important detail. But then,
yeah, they just want to defame in the press, and the damage is done, and after that, what the hell, right? You've been damaged. That's probably the way they think.
Yeah, and then they throw in a couple of details. If I'd been interviewed, and they say, well, you supported a Holocaust denier, Ernst Zundel. I would say, well, actually, Ernst is a Holocaust skeptic. There is perhaps a difference. But I just defended his right to free speech. Many years ago, I defended the right a Little Sister's bookstore in Vancouver to be able to import homosexual literature. They were hassled repeatedly by Canada Customs, as were populist groups. And I support them, even though I have absolutely no love of homosexuality, lesbianism, or whatever. It's the principle. They have the right to have their literature. I supported the right of Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam to come to Toronto, this was about 20 years ago, to give a speech, and the Jewish groups were agitating to keep him out of the country. I don't agree with the Nation of Islam, or at least on many things I don't agree with them, But that's not the point. I believe in free speech, whether I agree with you or not. There is a difference. The way it's phrased, though, I supported him because he denies the Holocaust. If Ernst did not deny the Holocaust, I would not support him. I would probably not have to support him because he probably received the Order of Canada. Because he would then have the right views. So this is a smear. And you're right. I'm quite shocked that many people in Hamilton actually read this Ray. It's their source of news. They don't read the Globe or the National Post. They read this. So what they would know of me from this is I would seem to support the shooting of these 50 Muslims in New Zealand, which is not true. And so Trump is right when he talks about you lie, you lie, you lie. And it's fake news. There is no news there. I don't support the shooting. In fact, the source that was available to them said I don't support the shooting. But this also fits in with my belief that the mass media, the news media, is not about news. You see, this isn't news. There is no news there. I don't support the shooting. But it's about soap opera. And the beautiful thing about soap operas, it is very easy to follow because they're very obvious. Good guy. Good girl, bad girl. I don't think you have to read very, very perceptibly to figure out I must be a bad guy. And they're investigating me for hate speech.
Yeah, so the press is just a weapon. They're just using it as a weapon against you. And if they did apologize, it would just be a little note on the back and they probably never would.
Well, I talked to a guy named Howard Levitt, who's the publisher, and I don't think Mr. Levitt comes from County Tipperary, if you know what I mean. Anyway, he said, we'll concede about white supremacists. That's a good first step. Unless they indicate I oppose the shooting, playing with a slight improvement on the wording isn't going to cut it. So I don't know what will happen, but my intention is to take them to the Ontario Press Council.
Because the damage has been done to your reputation. Yeah, the damage is already done.
Read this and motivate it to seek me out and ask me, is this what you really believe? Well, we'll come around with a very false impression. This is why every time I hear that there's a declining in circulation, I cheer. The more and more people are on our meet, I cheer even louder because we are slowly winning thinking people away from this vomitorium of lies and distortions called mass media.
Well, my concern is the majority of people that aren't thinking that much, the majority still has the power of the vote, so we are thinking in the minority, it seems always.
Yes. Well, I'll probably have an update in due course, but that's the story as far as it goes now.
Okay, Paul, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for sharing that with us. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Please donate to the Brian Rear Show at the link below. Consider that during the time of the Russian Revolution, average working Jews were donating like 30% of their income or more to support the Russian Revolution because it was good for the Jews. So we have to support our leaders in the truth movement, and many of those leaders are guests on my show now and in the future. So supporting the Brian Rear Show is your obligation.
And that was my show with Brian Root and explaining what had happened to me. And I think, once again, Brian doesn't get nearly enough credit for the tremendous amount of really great material he keeps putting out. This is something I'm very, very enthusiastic about. Play a kind of unusual thing here, and this is kind of a warning, and I think it's a well-taken one. Oh, here we are. Well, you can't hear it, so we're going to This also has to do with the shooting and the reaction, the extraordinary reaction. It's called reality check. And okay, sure why we are not able to get the sound on this. It's quite a good show. And quite a good take on. You probably noticed that the media has gone something close to starkers since the shooting. And while nobody would deny that something happened there, and it's not a good thing, the reaction is out of all proportion to what actually did happen. Not quite sure why we're not able to get the sound on this. Because I did before the show. And this is called Reality Check. The hype about let me try to get this back.
Healing mosques and opened fire.
Okay.
49 people and wounding countless others. But the shots were still echoing off the walls when the left started wielding this story as a political cudgel against Donald Trump, his voters, conservatives, strong immigration supporters, gun owners, and the ever mysterious white supremacists. The attack spurred global calls for solidarity with Muslims, while CNN blamed Trump, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez went all out against white racists and Islamophobia. But here's something you probably haven't heard. In Nigeria, more than 120 Christians have been killed and over 140 homes have been burned by militant Fulani Muslims since February, 69 of them in just the last week. The victims included men, women, and children. One woman, who suffered severe injuries after an attack, later delivered a stillborn baby. Now raise your hand if you heard any of this on CNN. Probably not, even though some global agencies are now calling violence against Nigerian Christians an all-out religious genocide. Thousands were killed last year alone. In the Congo, Muslims with the Allied Democratic Forces killed six people, including three women and a 9-year-old boy, Sunday, in an attack that forced another 500 people to flee their predominantly Christian village. In the majority Hindu nation of India, hate crimes against Christians jumped 57% in the first 2 months of this year. Two men were murdered in February for their faith. In another incident, a female pastor was assaulted into unconsciousness by a police officer during a raid on a church. When the cops thought she was faking, they poured boiling tea in her mouth. And here was the scene in the Gaza Strip this weekend, where Palestinians celebrated a terror attack that killed one Jewish man and wounded another by passing out candy in the streets. Happened about 48 hours after the mosque shooting, but I didn't see this clip on AOC's Twitter feed. Interesting that a crazy man shooting up a mosque immediately launches global cries of sympathy for the Muslim community, while the genocide of thousands of Christians in Africa gets crickets. And pay no attention to Palestine celebrating the death of Jews. It's almost as though the media cherry-picks what evil it's going to focus on in order to spin a particular narrative, while all that inconvenient stuff just gets swept under the rug. But see, here's the funny thing about evil. It doesn't have any common denominator, except that it's evil. It doesn't know any particular race, skin tone, ethnicity, or political persuasion. It certainly doesn't hold allegiance to any president. Oh, but the left wants you to think it does. Now, you can grasp at one event in another country and use it to paint millions of Trump supporters as violent racists all you want, but all that does is make you part of the problem. And it shows you're willing to turn a blind eye to the evil in the rest of the world if it doesn't fit your political narrative and make for a handy weapon to wield against people you don't like. So yeah, the guy who walked into that mosque in New Zealand and opened fire is about as evil as they come. And those militant Muslims who just massacred a whole bunch of Christians in Nigeria that you didn't hear about, if the left won't talk about them. And that's your Reality Check America. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube page, like us on Facebook and Twitter. Stay informed.
Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. I'm going to take my musical break right now, and I hope you like this. This is Heather Miles, I think. She's a great singer, I think, quite underestimated. So, Heather Miles, and this is... a great song by hers. Actually, originally a Leroy Van Dyke song, Walk On By. Well.
Just walk on by.
Wait on the corner. Just walk on by, wait on the corner. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet. If I see you tomorrow on some street in town, pardon me if I don't stop to say hello. It would look so good to know someone I'm not supposed to know. Just walk on by, wait on the corner. I love you, but we're strangers when we meet.
Strange, yes. I'll play its song. I think this is a really moving song by one of the real greats of country and western music. He recruited so many singers, among them the very beautiful Connie Smith. And this man is Bill Anderson, often called Whispering Bill Anderson. Great man with a ballad.
Today about our friends at the Grand Ole Opry, as we salute the Grand Ole Opry, our country's family reunion. I don't think anybody has mentioned the name of Roy Acuff, but I want to do that because some of my greatest memories of being on the Opry were the nights that Mr. Roy would come out on the stage and allow me to share the spotlight with him and do this song right here. I got a lot of wonderful memories. If we have time, I'll share some of you, but first I'd like to do the song, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope maybe you remember. One night we were out on tour getting ready to do a show. And at the time, it really wasn't anything all that special. It was what you might call just another one-night stand. When I looked over my guitar, and there stood an old man. His cowboy clothes were frayed and worn, and his roots were far from new. He said, "I'd like to sit in with your band." He said, "I'm a country singer too." Yeah, well, we just all had a big laugh. When I looked back at the old man, there was a tear in his eye. So I told the band to cool, because I didn't want to see him cry. He reached down and he took my guitar, with a determined look on his face. But then as he started to play and sing, a look of sadness took its place. He said, "I've sang my songs from Maine to California, sing the world through the window of a car. I never made a dime back when I made it, never saved a dime. I always thought so, I'd be a star. But now my voice is cracked and no one wants me. My wife gave up on me years ago. It's been so long, my kid don't even know me. And picking and singing is the only life I know." And then he said,
"I wonder if God likes country music. Will there be a place up there to sing my song? My fingers nimble like they used to be, so I can play the chord and sing along. I wonder if God likes country music."
I just stood there.
Will there be a
none of us really knew what to say. Took my old guitar and he sat it down ever so gently. And then as he turned to leave, the band stood up with applause. But I can still hear his words today.
"I wonder if God likes country music. Will there be a place up there to sing my song? Will it make my fingers nimble like they used to be, so I can play the chord and sing along?"
That's Bill Anderson. I wonder if God loves. loves country music. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's a song, I think first recorded by George Jones, while he was still alive, Murder on Music Row, something that complained about some of the things that happened to country music. Jackson, George Strait, Murder on Music Row. It's a great song by a person who plays in Heather Miles' band. No One Will Ever Know.
Mm-hmm. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with the game tomorrow. Same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those
just
are
Eastern... walk on by!
All those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign up tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.